Today, a full-time minimum wage job in America will not keep a mama and a baby out of poverty. That is wrong, and that is why I am in this fight. There it is.
Elizabeth Warren will be one of seven candidates participating in tonight's Democratic presidential debate. And Philadelphia Inquirer reporter Jonathan Tamari says a lot of what she'll say on the stage has its roots in the Philadelphia region in ways you might not expect.
Before Elizabeth Warren came to Rutgers Law School, she was a fairly apolitical person, not somebody who was deeply involved in the debates, Democrat versus Republican. But if she did come down on a side, she would consider herself a political conservative.
Why did Elizabeth Warren's politics change so radically? And how much of that was based on her early legal career in New Jersey and Philadelphia? I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov. This is The Why. Jonathan talked to dozens of Warren's law school classmates and students about the origins of her political views. Jonathan, how did Elizabeth Warren end up at Rutgers?
Yeah, and this is a question that really kind of drove a lot of my reporting in the first place, because we were wondering, how did this young woman who grew up in Oklahoma end up in Newark, New Jersey for law school? And it turns out that, you know, she'd gotten married young, had a child young, and her husband had been transferred to North Jersey for his job. He worked for IBM. And while they were there, Elizabeth Warren began her career as a teacher. She got pregnant. Her teaching career ended. And she was looking for what she could do next and applied to a number of law schools. But Rutgers was obviously very close to where they were living, a relatively short commute. It was a school that was fairly inexpensive at the time. I believe it was around $900 a year. Mm-hmm. And it was a place that was actively recruiting women and people of color, which was very different for law schools at the time, I'm told, by people who went to Rutgers. And so she applied there and a number of other schools and got in and enrolled in the fall of 1973.
And so you mentioned it's pretty diverse. Just generally, what was Rutgers like at the time?
It was a place they called the People's Electric Law School, and that was a reference to the very, very liberal, some might say revolutionary bent of the school at the time. This was only a few years after the Newark riots, which was an eruption against police abuse and mistreatment. People in Newark and at the law school referred to it as the uprising, even though many other people just refer to them as the riots. And it was a place that had this very activist streak to it. And so when you talk to people there, and including one of her classmates, Lou Ravison, who now teaches at Rutgers, but who then was a classmate of Warren's, you know, he said, "I don't want to say there was revolution in the air, but people were there to make systemic change."
A lot of the students who were going to law school at the time were there because they wanted to change the city, the state, the country, the world.
And that's something that kind of echoes now when you think about the Warren campaign today.
So Elizabeth Warren, now a young mother, comes to the school in the early 70s. And at that time, how did she, do you think, describe herself politically?
Yeah, I mean, she was not very involved in politics, but she came from a family that I believe was more conservative, and she held those views as well. She would typically vote Republican, although not always, but she wasn't somebody who was just deeply involved in those discussions and was not the kind of person who was going to be involved in these clinics that so many of her classmates were involved in. And part of that also just has to do with the practical aspect of her being a mother at the time. And she would go to law school during the day and was expected to be taking care of her young daughter, cleaning the house, cooking, and doing all the things that a housewife was expected to do at the same time as she was trying to earn her degree. She would bring her daughter into class with her, and one of her classmates recalled, you know, hearing the snack packs crinkling and seeing Amy drawing in the back of the class while the rest of them were, you know, learning about the law.
Yeah.
The other thing I would say that stood out about her is that her classmates do remember her as being, you know, extremely sharp, kind of ahead of the curve of her class there.
She was thrilled by the law in a way that most law students are not. She sort of glowed with the thrill of intellectual discovery, and that's rare in a law student.
But they don't remember her just being openly political. They mostly say, you know, it really never came up. But when it did come up, their impression was of somebody who was moderate or conservative.
Mm. So Elizabeth Warren's in this very liberal activist law school at Rutgers. I mean, is it clear that the law school changed her at all?
You know, when you talk to people who went to Rutgers, they say that being in that kind of atmosphere, that kind of liberal cauldron, as we describe it in the story, had to have some kind of lasting impact, especially with people who were talking about changing systems and changing politics to kind of fight the powerful and help the less powerful. The other thing that really made a lasting impression on her was her classes with a professor named Alan Axelrod, who's described as this genius professor who taught about bankruptcy law. And she and him were very close. And bankruptcy is the area where Warren would later make her name. And her studies of bankruptcy would eventually change her political views as she got older, even if they did not change while she was actually at Rutgers. That evolution really came a while later as she started to study bankruptcy law more closely. It would be several decades even before she became a Democrat.
When we come back,
her and her colleagues make a big splash in the legal world, and that's how she catches Penn's attention.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is The Why. I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov. I'm talking with Philadelphia Inquirer reporter Jonathan Tamari about Elizabeth Warren's political evolution from conservative to progressive, and how some of that evolution happened while she was a law professor in Philadelphia. So after a few teaching stints at, the University of Texas and University of Houston, she found herself at the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia. How did she make her way there?
Yeah, so as you said, she had those two other teaching stints, and along the way, she and two colleagues began doing this research on bankruptcy. And even then, she was kind of more the pro-business one of the trio, the person who thought that maybe people were taking advantage of the bankruptcy laws to avoid paying some of their debts that they probably could have paid. But as they do this research, they're doing it in a way that's very different from a lot of other law professors are doing it. And they're actually going and reviewing the court records and interviewing individual people, almost doing reporting. Mm-hmm. And she comes to find that a lot of the people going through bankruptcy are regular, ordinary people who have made mistakes and gotten in over their heads, but through without any malice, in her view, without any wrongdoing. And so as she did this research, though, I think she came to see that these were families that maybe were not much different from the one that she believed she grew up in Oklahoma, and that were maybe a few mistakes away from, that maybe her own family might have been a few mistakes away from ending up in a similar situation.
My daddy had a severe heart attack. He pulled through, but he couldn't work for a long, long time. And even now, I remember the day when we lost the family station wagon.
And so this begins to change her philosophy about bankruptcy. And her initial papers on this also, at the same time, really gain a lot of notice. And her colleagues make a big splash in the legal world. And that's how she catches Penn's attention. And they decide to recruit both her and her husband.
Mm. And this is her second husband now. Right.
That's right. This is her second husband, Bruce Mann, who is a legal historian. And they are teaching in different schools at the time. But Penn wants to bring them both in 1987 and hires both of them.
Hmm. So how was she regarded as a teacher?
According to her colleagues, she was considered one of the best professors on the staff. And there are a number of students who really see her as transformational and that she really changed their paths. One of those was a person named Anne Marie LoFaso.
And my title is Arthur B. Hodges, Professor of Law at West Virginia University College of Law.
And she says she uses many of the same techniques that she studied in Senator Warren's class. And what comes out at Penn is that you start to see some of these explanatory skills that Warren is really known for on the debate stage, in her campaigns, where she's able to sell these policy ideas and turn them into very simple rallying cries, illustrate them with very vivid, tangible examples. And this is what she's doing in the classroom as she talks about bankruptcy and creditors and complicated things like that that sound like they could be awfully dull.
She had this knack for taking extremely complex subject matter and breaking it down so it was understandable immediately. So I always felt I understood completely what the subject matter was after I came out of her class.
So what's an example of one of these big concepts that she makes very simple on the campaign trail?
Yeah, so one of her signature policies is her wealth tax.
This is a 2-cent tax on the top 0.1% of fortunes in this country.
And when you see her pitch this, it's a tax plan. It's not really the most exciting thing in the world. Mm. But when you see her pitch this, she says,
so your first $50 million, free and clear.
And she wipes her brow with relief.
I know you're relaxing now. For your 50 millionth and first dollar, you got to pitch in 2 cents.
And her crowds, when she gives this, she has delivered this speech so often that her supporters begin chanting, 2 cents, 2 cents. And it's people chanting about a percentage tax,
right?
Yet she's turned this into a rallying cry. And so that's an example of how she uses that and how that drives her politics.
It also seems very reasonable when she says it that way, that it's only your first 50 million is fine.
Exactly. And I'm sure lots of people would disagree. And there was, University of Chicago professor I spoke to who also teaches bankruptcy law, and he disagrees with her. They have very different philosophies, but he said he would get into debates with her and it would be frustrating because she would make points that were hard to disagree with in a soundbite, mm-hmm. even if you thought that they were wrong.
Mm. She taught at Penn through the mid-90s. Then she gets a job at Harvard, and we know that it was sometime after that she launched her political career in Massachusetts. So, at some point there, she moved from conservative to liberal, right?
That's right, but it's a slow evolution. Even when she gets to Penn and she's already into a lot of her bankruptcy work, when she arrives in Philadelphia, or she lives in Ballykinwood, just outside the city, she registers as a Republican in Pennsylvania. And in 1992, she votes for Bill Clinton for president, the Democrat, but she also votes to reelect the Republican Senator Arlen Specter, who at that time was a major target for people on the left because he had led the Clarence Thomas Supreme Court confirmation. There was a lot of complaints that he had mistreated Anita Hill, who had accused Justice Thomas of sexually harassing her, and yet Warren votes for him. So she still has a little bit of that moderate streak to her through her time at Penn. But we start to see some of this changing as time goes on. In 1993, she gets an offer from Harvard, and, she's talking to the student newspaper up there at the law school and talks about some of her testimony in Congress and says, I want my voice to be heard, not just the voice of the lobbyists.
Hmm. And so it sounds like she's moving to the left maybe at that point.
It does, and it certainly sounds like we're starting to hear the message of, I'm fighting for regular people against these powerful moneyed interests, which is something that has continued to fuel her political career.
What do you think the value is at looking at someone's beginnings, the beginning of their careers, in considering their, their political ideology?
College is a formative experience, and law school as well. Mm-hmm. And even if your politics change, I think a lot of your personality is shaped by that experience, and other people might have different experiences like that if you were in the military or different life experiences. But for people who did go to college, I think it is such a formative experience, and it sticks with you in ways that you might not even realize until later on in life. What you really see from Rutgers and Penn is people see the personality that we see on stage. They might not have seen the politics that she would later embrace entirely. Most people, again, at those times saw her as moderate to conservative, but they see the kind of feisty debate attitude that she has. They see the way she can explain complex ideas. They see the same person, just with a slightly different political bent, but the same personality, the same skills, and the same delivery.
Whatever her specific view is about capitalism or socialism, it's really clear that her strongest interest is protecting people with less money against corporate interests that tend to take advantage of everyone in order to make as much money as they possibly can. So even if she views that within a capitalist structure, she still believes most in terms of that structure, in making sure that there is economic equality.
And so I'm always interested in what these folks were like when they were younger, before they became politicians, before they became famous. What might have happened that shaped them? What might they have done that gave us hints of who they would become?
Jonathan, thank you so much for speaking with me.
Thank you for having me.
Jonathan Tamari is a reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer. The Y is produced by me, Shai Ben-Yaakov, along with Annette John Hall, Alex Stern, and Kelsey Hansen, with editorial direction from Katie Colinari. Drop us a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. That kind of thing really helps us get onto lists and just get noticed, and it's really nice to hear your feedback. We're taking a break for the holidays, and we'll be back with new episodes starting New Year's Day. Until then, have a happy holiday from all of us here at The Y. See you in 2020.